Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning into the Misericordia University Alumni Podcast. I am your host, Class of 2017 and 2019 alumnus, Mike Gambita. Today on the show, we are featuring a postcard profile. Ladies and gentlemen, and alumni of Misericordia, please welcome 2021 and 2022 alumna, Anna Fostick. Anna, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
We're really excited. First of all, congratulations. Welcome to Alumni Forever. We try to gear our podcast in May to a recent graduate. I'm really excited for you to share your story and be well embraced with the alumni community. So let's just jump right into it, Anna. What have you been up to since you've graduated from Misericordia?
Well, it's been a time of a lot of preparation. I'm getting ready to go out on level two fieldworks. So I'm working on getting all like the paperwork in order, and I haven't gotten the name of my fieldwork site just yet. COVID has kind of slowed the process down a little bit, made things a little bit more difficult. But once I find out where I'm going to be, you know, looking up some of the diagnoses the place I'm going to sees the most often and preparing myself as best I can for that. I'm also getting ready to launch the research project I've been working on. The school IRB just set out the final approvals, so we're all set to start, which I'm really excited for too.
Cool. And we'll certainly talk about your research much later on, but I thought I'd ask you, Anna, as I've been asking some of our guests on the show, because when we all go to Misericordia, we all have a degree or a major that we pursue. But my question to you is, what made you want to pursue occupational therapy?
So I knew for a really long time I wanted to do something where I could help people. And it was a really convoluted path to get to OT. My junior year of high school, I took anatomy, and the professor had a really cool deal. We had to do a science project, and she said that juniors and seniors could, instead of doing a science project, could pick two disciplines to shadow. And so I actually didn't even pick OT as one of my two disciplines. I picked athletic training and PT. And both were really cool in their respective ways, but like neither one really like hit the mark for me. I was like, we're getting close, but this isn't it. And I ended up finding OT in some of my research on PT. And the more I looked into it, the more I was like, this is exactly where I'm meant to be.
That's awesome. And I know like in so many cases, we have that time where we almost find ourselves in reality. Like we find ourselves as far as what we want to do, and what we want to pursue, actually. So for someone who's just graduated, you know, we always try to reflect back as far as someone's time at Misericordia or College Misericordia, as it was. Talk me through just your Misericordia experience, you know, how that was, at least in the 4 years for now. You still have a fifth year to go, but talk to me about some of the 4 years that you had at Misericordia and how was it?
It was great. I would not change my decision to come to Misericordia for anything. It allowed me to meet so many like incredible people, and it allowed me to partake in so many incredible opportunities that like I couldn't even imagine getting the chance to partake in. I came to Misericordia in 2017 after I graduated high school. And right off the bat, I started getting involved in campus life. I started working at the library on campus. I was there for all 4 years of my college career. And then as I advanced through my program, I got to do other things where I got to participate in things like MSOTA activities. And MSOTA is the Misericordia Occupational Therapy Association club on campus. And I did that. I got to work with some of my professors as a TA, and I got to work as a tutor. And like, I really just tried to say yes. Like that was my goal throughout college, was just to say yes and try new things. And I'm really glad I did.
Now it's an interesting turn on how you took on the library. Let's dive deeper into that. How did you get involved with the library? And I'm sure all the ladies and gents over there at the library will be super happy to hear, you know, your experience there. But just kind of talk me through, because I think anybody who has an experience at Misericordia can similarly relate to the major degree that you pursue. But all the extracurriculars, like the library, is interesting. So talk to me about that.
Well, I needed a job is how it started. I have worked like ever since I was a junior in high school and I had a way of getting there. And, you know, I got to college and I was like, you know, I was talking to my mom. I was like, I feel like I can balance it. I feel like I can, you know, keep up my studies and still work. So I qualified for work study. And so there's a page of work study positions that you can find on Misericordia's website that are open and need to apply to. And I found the library and my mom was like, you know, your love of books, like, it seems like a good place for you. Why don't you give it a shot? So I was like, okay. And yeah, the rest is kind of history. I found the position. It was the first one I applied to. And within a couple weeks, I was all set up and ready to start working.
Now, here's going to be a stumper of a question because you said you have a love for books. What are some of your favorite books?
Oh, that's hard. Let me see. So I've started reading a lot more, nonfiction books.
Okay.
So a lot more biographies and like histories and things like that. I just finished reading the book Women in White Coats, and it was incredible. It was about the first woman doctors. And okay. What they had to do in order to make a name for themselves in the professional sphere. So I'm really getting into those kind of books too. There's also a great book. The name of it's escaping me right now, but it's by Bonner Paddock.
Okay.
And it's Bonner has a type of CP or cerebral palsy, and he hiked Mount Kilimanjaro. And it was just really incredible to read his journey. So they're both some of my favorites that come to mind immediately.
See, that wasn't a stumper of a question. You know them off the top of your head. So Anna, I know, we're just fresh off of this year's commencement activities. And I know for some of our alumni, you know, everyone had a very traditional commencement. But let's just say you're laughing already. Let's just say your commencement was interesting. Just talk me through how that day was. I wouldn't say like not reflecting, because we'll ask you later about reflecting about how your Misericordia experience got to where you are today. But just talk to me about, you know, just the event aspect, like some of the things you participated in. How did it actually feel to be a part of commencement? Things like that, to be able to give our alumni a better understanding of what exactly happened this year.
So because of COVID, we did have a non-traditional type of graduation. I think the school did a good job of trying to make it as traditional as possible in light of like CDC guidelines and everything. The biggest difference I feel like in our graduation compared to others is we had to follow social distancing. Each person was only allowed 2 in-person guests. But to be honest, me and like my friends, we were just ecstatic to be able to have an in-person graduation. So what we did was like the morning of graduation, you know, we all got ready, we got into our caps and gowns, and we met over at McDowell to sign in. And that's when the social distancing part started. We all had to stand 6 feet apart from each other. We all got matching masks, which was pretty cool.
It's a nice trade.
And we followed the bagpipers in, and it was an abbreviated graduation ceremony because they split up the majors. So they had like, for my graduation ceremony, there was 4. It was just OT and nursing. So I was this part of the second graduation ceremony, and we went in, you know, the bagpipers did their thing. My mom cried because something about the bagpipes, it brings her to tears every time.
Those things get you going. Like if I had to like be walked in somewhere, like it's bagpipes for me. So
I agree. Like it made everything seem like really like you were in an action movie almost, especially when like the drums kicked in. It was fun. But we went in and we had the ceremony, and then Dr. Owens called us up and we all received our diplomas. So it was a really nice day, like I said, non-traditional, but as traditional as humanly possible.
And I was obviously a part of some of those festivities, and I think it was really cool that you had the opportunity to get your diploma and just, quite frankly, just celebrate the day on campus. I mean, I know so many of us understood what happened last year in 2020 with some of the graduating classes. They never had a chance to be a part of the campus, and their last time being a part of campus was in March, for at least the spring class. So I think it's a really, we take things for granted, I think, as you can probably agree, that we take things for granted as far as ceremonies like that itself. But Anna, I know it's almost a round one for you, as you'll be obviously moving in for your Master of Science in Occupational Therapy. But one of the things that I wanted to bring you on the show about was your awesome research that you have going on. I'd love for all of our alumni to kind of understand what you got going on in that realm, but be able to just kind of give the, I don't want to say start to finish, but kind of give that journey as to, you know, how you got into it.
Absolutely. So again, as most things in my collegiate career, it started at the library. So there was an upperclassman OT, his name is Jeremy, and he worked at the library as a work study too. And that's, I met him a couple other times through like MSOTA activities, but like that's where we first really got to meet in person and have like an extended conversation. And I looked up to him in so many ways. I looked up to him like as an OT because he was really involved on campus. He was so intelligent. But I also looked up to him as a human too. He was just a good human. I don't know how else to describe it. He never seemed like he was in a bad mood. He, despite being one of the busiest people, I would argue, on campus, he always made time to talk to you. You know, if you wanted to talk and say, hey. But he did have a type of congenital heart disease, which unfortunately is how he died 2 months ago, or 2 years ago, I'm sorry. And when I found out that he had passed away, obviously it kind of like turned my world upside down. And not only was he my friend, but it was weird to think that like someone our age had died and so suddenly, kind of like what you were saying before about COVID, like we kind of take things for granted. So after he died, I kind of like was at a standstill in life, as dramatic as that sounds. Like I just kind of needed answers. And so I started doing research on congenital heart disease as a way to try to get some of those answers and as like a way to grieve. And then it just kind of turned into like a beast all its own. And, you know, I started gathering all this data and all this information, and I was reading these articles online from like the databases that we had through the school. And I was like, you know, I feel like OT could help with this. Like the congenital heart disease population, the OT doesn't play a big role in currently. But as I was looking more and more at the research, I was like, well, why not? I feel like we could be of a big service here. A lot of the things they struggle with is within our realm of practice. And I was like, no, we need to do something about this. So one day in the middle of my junior year, I came in and I met with another incredible person. Her name is Jennifer DeSoy. She's a professor in the OT department. One of my favorite humans across the board. She's incredible. She's so intelligent. She is always there for her students. She will cheer you on. I'm not sure when she sleeps. She's so involved in like everything on campus. Like she's superhuman. But I went to her because I was like, I cannot think of anyone better for this. Like if anyone can help me, it'll be her. And she always was like a big cheerleader for me, and like it was a sensitive topic, you know, and I felt comfortable going to her with it. So I came in and I like plopped down like a 30-something page like literature review of everything I had learned. I had made a Google Doc with all my notes, and I was like, so I did this thing and I need help knowing what to do next. And with Dr. DeSoy's help, I was able to start a research project for my senior year project on congenital heart disease, which is really cool.
That's, I mean, what a story. I mean, that's, I for, you know, I'm speechless to the point, but that's simply because, you know, I think everybody knew Jeremy at a really decent rate as far as what you were saying. Like, you had a personal connection with him, and that's what inspired you to get started with this project. What's been some of the challenges with your research so far? You know, has there been any roadblocks? Has there been any time where it's like, okay, maybe I'll come back to it another day? has there been, you know, the point where you just want to rip your hair out? Like, you know, what have been some of the challenges with your research?
So I started like my preliminary research during junior year, and junior year has a reputation as being the most difficult year in our program because of the workload. And so there were a lot of late nights because I wouldn't finish like my own homework until like, you know, 10 or 11 at night. And then like, I would need to do my research work. And that was challenging in and of itself because I started all of this before I even had my research classes for my major. So I was kind of flying blind. I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just, you know, doing the best I could. And it was cool, actually, because when I ended up taking my research methods class, you know, later on in junior year, I was like, I did that. I just didn't know there was a name for that process. So that was definitely one of the biggest challenges. And then, like, in order to get a research project approved, it has to go through something called an institutional review board, or the IRB. And the IRB, it has been like quite the process because you have to be very detail oriented. You have to have all your ducks in a row. It's not all that uncommon to have them like not necessarily reject your research proposal, but say like you need to make these changes and then resubmit it for us to look into it again. So the IRB approval process was a lengthy one. So I'd say those were probably the two biggest challenges of the research so far. They were all well worth it. Like, I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
I think it's cool how you had that trial by fire, because like you were saying, like you were doing stuff that you had no idea how to name or a process to. But I'm sure that really helped you out. I mean, as far as doing well in that class, and mind I say, like, great job for starting your junior year with this massive research project, because I've witnessed students in their junior year of occupational therapy, and they're warriors. Let's put it that way. But Anna, I know there's some exciting things that are coming up for you with this research. Actually, before we do that, where are you at right now? With, I don't want to say with the research, but like, at what point are you at right now with this research going on?
So I just got the final IRB approval. So myself, along with Dr. DeSoy, she was the faculty member helping with this project. And then there's three other students in my research group who have been helping me get this together. We're about to implement it. What we did was there is a link between executive functioning and quality of life in people with congenital heart disease in the literature. And we wanted to look at it from more of an occupational therapy standpoint and see, like, if they're, you know, how does their executive functioning affect their quality of life? Or, you know, will our results support what the literature already suggests? Because if we find out that, like, their executive functioning or their difficulties with it hinders their quality of life, we could step in, because executive functioning is one of the things OTs can help individuals with. Coming up with, like, you know, strategies to improve it or at least compensate for it. The project is basically a questionnaire, and it pulls questions from the World Health Organization's quality of life questionnaire, which, let me tell you, trying to get in contact with them during the pandemic for permission to use this questionnaire was a great time. But we have that, and then there was an executive functioning questionnaire that we found that has good reliability and validity. And so this questionnaire combines questions from both of those assessments, as well as some questions me and the three other girls I'm working with came up with. And so the questionnaire is all made up. We have the permissions. We're just waiting to send it out.
Okay, cool. But I, as much as you're at that checkpoint right now, there's some exciting things that are coming up in the next coming months. Why don't you share with us what you got going on?
Absolutely. So back in January, I got an email from Dr. DeSoy over Christmas break, and she was like, Anna, there's this thing called Future Scientists of OT. It's a program put on by IOTA or the American Occupational Therapy Association. And she was like, I think you should try to apply. It's a program, it's open to people across the country, all college students. The only like people who aren't allowed to apply are people who are already attending very research-oriented schools. So I don't even know like if Johns Hopkins has an OT program, but like think along those lines,
right.
Like those really research-oriented schools. They're not allowed to apply, but everyone else is. And so Dr. DeSoy was like, I think you could, you know, there's a chance you could get in. I think you'd really benefit from it. And so I applied, and I found out a couple weeks ago that I got in. I was selected as one of the winners of the program. It's really cool. Based off like past lists, there's like 50 to 100 of us somewhere in that range that end up getting selected ultimately. But I'm going to get to meet up with some doctoral and postdoctoral individuals, and we're going to get to talk about research trends in OT and topics to discuss and like kind of network and kind of help you get into the research realm of OT, which like I cannot be more excited for.
I was just going to ask, how do you feel about all this experience?
Well, when I found out, I screamed, I scared my roommates. I didn't mean to. I was just so excited because I'd been waiting for so long to hear. And I remember I texted Dr. DeSoy and I was like, Jen, I got it. Like, I was so excited. I'm pretty sure I forgot to even say what I got into. Like, I was just like, Jen, I got in. And right. Then I clarified what I was talking about after that. But I'm so excited. Because the more I've gotten into the heart research, the more I realize like this, I think, is meant to be my path in OT. Just more of the research based.
You ready for the $1 million question?
Hit me.
what do you hope to achieve within this research?
So I'm so glad you asked me this question. So my purpose, I kind of have a dual purpose. One, I just kind of want to raise awareness for CHD in general. CHD affects approximately 1% of babies. According to CHOP, that's a rate 60 times higher than all childhood cancers combined. Yet childhood cancer receives 5 times more funding from the National Health Institute in terms of research than CHD does. And I really think if it's such a major part of our population that, you know, experiences these difficulties, that more attention should be given to them. So I want to raise awareness because the more research we do, the more we can help them and improve their quality of life. Because it would just mean so much to me. I would never want one of them to have a poor quality of life when they could have a better one just because the research isn't there to help them. My other hope is that I can help make this more into a common thing for OTs to deal with.
Okay.
I want to prove that OT has a role here. And based off of what I read and the research that I've done, I really think there is one. But just because, like, this is almost, I don't want to say a hidden population, but it's not one that's talked about very often. I feel like you hear about like childhood cancer way more than you hear about CHD, despite those prevalence, you know, differences that I just was talking about. So I want to find a way to show that OTs can help this population.
And I think your research is going to do just that. And I hope that I'm sure you have the confidence already, but if there's any assurance, I think that's going to carry on for quite some time in your experience. But Anna, speaking of experience, we always ask our alumni, exactly, you know, how has Misericordia helped you get to where you are today? And you kind of sprinkled in, as everyone does, how that assistance has helped you. But this is your moment if you'd like to share, you know, how has Misericordia got you to where you are today?
Well, I can definitely say without a shadow of a doubt that I would not be anywhere near where I am today if it weren't for Misericordia, specifically our OT program. The OT faculty are all some of the most knowledgeable, kindest people I've ever met. They are there to help you learn and to cheer you on as you do it. And like their support and their help in like every, you know, realm, helping me with like professional development and helping me like, you know, like learn the tools of the trade, so to speak. And like I said, their support, like that's the only reason I am where I am today is because of their help. So I will always be grateful.
Yeah. And I know based on just some of the experiences I had, it's a very tight knit community when it comes to the OT program and some of the professors that you've had experiences with.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just absolutely. You hit it on the head.
Now, Anna, this is a great time if you want to give any shout outs to any classmates or now alumni that you would like to share the audio with as far as this podcast.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, so I want to say hi to Catherine Davey. She is one of my best friends, and I'm really excited I get to say hi to her on this. It's kind of like a, hey, look, Ma, I made it situation. I also want to say hi to Megan Aldeck and Allie Stallard, because they're two of my other best friends. And without the three of them, like, they were three people who helped to keep me sane when I was balancing this research project in junior year. And, like, I couldn't have made it without them.
Roommates for life. That's what I always say.
Absolutely.
Well, Anna, anything else to share or you'd like to share with our alumni to conclude this podcast?
I'm just really grateful to be a part of the alumni now. I think that's the biggest thing I'd like to share. I'm really excited to get to see what Ms. does next.
That's a great way to end it. Well, Anna, thank you so much for joining us today, and best of luck on your research and best of luck on your presentations and all that success and endeavors that you have.
Thank you.